I want to ask you a question this afternoon. Pretty simple one, but one that has a lot of different ways to go. Believe. Do you believe? I can follow that up with a lot of different questions, different statements, and different things that we believe or don't believe in. As a matter of fact, a couple years ago, I gave a message on miracles. And I asked, do you believe in miracles? Well, today I want to ask a little different question. And I want to take this in a little different direction. But certainly the answer to that question or this question is pivotal in our lives, in our physical lives, our spiritual lives, and it's pivotal in the lives of all of humanity. I want to quickly read from wavebox.com. These are considered to be the 10 most famous quotes about belief. Consider. I have a dream. Do I need to fill in who that author was? The greatest glory in living lies not in never failing, but in rising every time we fall. Nelson Mandela. The way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. Walt Disney. So we beat on boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past. F. Scott Fitzgerald. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Lao Tzu. Don't judge each day by the harvest you reap, but by the seeds that you plant. Robert Louis Stevenson. If you want to make your dreams come true, the first thing you have to do is to wake up. J.M. Power. I can't change the direction of the wind, but I can adjust my sails to always reach my destination. Jimmy Dean. I don't know if that's the pork sausage guy or not. I didn't look that up. Believe you can, and you're halfway there. Theodore Roosevelt. And the last one. The best and most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even heard, but must be felt by the heart. Helen Keller. So the question for us today, you, me, everybody that is listening, everybody that will listen, is what do you believe? What really do you believe with every fiber and essence of your being? Who do you believe and why do you believe? The definition of belief is an acceptance that a statement is true or that something really exists. Something is true or really exists. The Pew study, which is a marketing research study, in 2022 said 9 in 10 Americans believe in a higher power, but only a slim majority believe in God as described in the Bible. Previous Pew Center research studies have shown that the share of Americans who believe in God with absolute certainty has declined in recent years, while the share saying they have doubts about God's existence or they do not believe in God has grown. It's going in the opposite direction. I don't think any surprise to any of us here who haven't read this Pew research study. A new Pew Research Center survey of more than 4,700 U.S. adults finds that 1/3 of Americans say they do not believe in the God of the Bible, but they do believe there is some other higher power or spiritual force in the universe. A slim majority of Americans, 56%, say they believe in God as described in the Bible, and 1 in 10 do not believe in any higher power or spiritual force. Belief in God has slipped to 80 to 89% over the same period. The share of Americans who said they believe in God with absolute certainty declined even more sharply from 71% in 2007 to 63% in 2014. The study found that 51% of Americans believe in God as an all-powerful, all-knowing, perfect, and just creator of the universe who still rules the world today. This is a significant decline from 30 years ago when that same number was 73%, that's now 51%. I'm sure if we took the survey in this room today, that those numbers would look quite different. At least I pray that that's the case. But this is the real condition of our world today. I know these numbers were U.S.-based, but let's face it, we're no better off than anybody else in the world when it comes to these kinds of things. So if many or most in the world do not believe in God or don't believe in the God of the Bible, how many believe in Satan the devil? Barna, which is another marketing research study, says the headline, "More Americans now believe in Satan than in God." Hold on to that for a second. Let that sink in. More Americans, the people next door, the people we work with, the people we have as friends, our family, more Americans now believe in Satan than they do in God. The third and latest report in Dr. George Barna's American Worldview Inventory 2020 evaluated the perceptions of God that people have in the U.S. Among the survey's most surprising findings are that more Americans believe in Satan than believe in God, and more people believe that Jesus was divine and a sinner than believe he is divine and sinless. When asked about the existence of Satan, 56% said Satan is not merely a symbol of evil, but is a real spiritual being and influences human lives. 49%, on the other hand, said they are not entirely sure that God exists. The authors conclude Americans are now more confident about the existence of Satan than they are the existence of God. How about you? How about me? And how about us? I'm sure it's probably easy for all of us, or most of us in this room, to absolutely feel confident and believe that there is a God Almighty. But do we feel the same depth of commitment and knowledge and understanding and surety that equally so, there is a being that is equally as true as Satan the devil? So do you believe? Do you really believe that there is a Satan the devil? And why do you believe that? What brings you to that understanding? What brings you to that conviction? What brings you to that knowledge? Is it the book? Or is it your personal life experiences that deliver you the realization that that Satan the devil is as real as God Almighty? I think I told this story a couple years ago, but I'll tell it again. A number of years ago, back in Rhode Island, we had a good friend of ours who was in the faith, played softball together, hung around with this guy. He was a ex-military, and he was always a little kind of odd, had some strange thoughts. But he started to go down some roads. And I remember we used to play racquetball together. Again, I played softball with him, and I wouldn't see him all the time or every week or necessarily even every month. He stopped coming to church, and I remember having a conversation where he told me that he knew he had committed the unpardonable sin. And he said, "Mike," he said, "I absolutely know what the unpardonable sin is, and I know I've committed it, and I'm okay with that." And he told me about times where he was in his home. He lived with his parents, and he was in his upstairs bedroom. And he actually, according to him, got picked up and thrown against the wall. And told me about a number of experiences that he had that I won't go in to tell them all. But ones that absolutely sent shivers up my spine. And the troubling thing was not only that I believed what he was telling me from his perspective, but I believed what he was telling me. I mean, you could look into this guy's eyes and see something that wasn't right and that wasn't good and that was very bad. One night, Sam and I were home in our house, and we lived up in the very wooded area. Wasn't a lot of lights. And all of a sudden, late at night, 9:30 at night, 10 o'clock at night, there's a knock on my door. I said, "Who is here at 10 o'clock at night?" Now, this is before cell phones and mobile devices and everything else. And I went downstairs. I looked turned the light on, looked outside, and here's this individual standing on my doorstep, my front doorstep. And he's got steam. It was, must have been maybe October, November in New England, so it was probably in the 40s. And he's got steam pouring off of him. I mean, it was just the most bizarre thing you'd ever seen in your life. It just steam just pouring off of him. And I opened the door, and I said this person's name. What's going on? Why are you here? He said, we need to talk. I said, about what? Things. And I said, okay. And I opened the door, and I started to go out, and he started to come in. And this guy was a pretty big guy, and I think he could have knocked me over with his left pinky. Pretty tough dude. And I said, no, we'll stay out here. Now, by this point in time, Sam was halfway up the stairs. Sam was running up to the bedroom and locking the door and left me downstairs with this guy. So finally, after a couple of minutes, he came in and we stood in my hallway, and then we kind of moved into my living room as he told me about his situation again. And he said, look, he said, I know where I am right now. He said, I know I've committed the unpardonable sin. He said, I know where I'm headed, and I'm okay with that. And I looked at him, I said, Jack, oops. You got to get yourself together. We got to fight this thing. He said, there is no fighting this. He said, I've just relinquished myself to the fact that I am part of the evil way. And we went back and forth. I think Sam finally came downstairs, and no, I think she stayed upstairs. Is that right? She just listened against the door. And finally, he left. I was able to get him out of the house. And I must say that is the first experience I had one-on-one directly with the effects of Satan, the devil. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians. Second Corinthians 10. And beginning in verse 5. Again, I ask the question, do you believe? Do you really believe? With every fiber of your being, do you believe? 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and, here's the piece, bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. A number of months ago, and again, I know I've mentioned this before, but Bob Payne gave one of the most incredible sermonettes I've ever heard in my life. One that changed my life personally. And starting to concentrate on our daily thoughts, on our moment-by-moment thoughts, and the things that come into our mind, and recognizing and realizing that you either let them go or you do something about them. And Bob's point was to, every time you get that bad thought, every time you get that bad idea in your head, you start, stop in the name of love, right? Stop in the name of love. Stop, 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 stop. Since Bob gave that sermonette, that has been a very active process in my life, and one, frankly, that I never had before. Not to say that I didn't address bad thoughts. Peripherally, I did. Maybe not with the rigor and the aggressiveness to defeat it. But this concept really changed my life. And I have been just every day, almost every moment of every day, I can't tell you how many times I say, stop, 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 stop. And sometimes say it out loud when nobody's around. And maybe Sam's heard me, or maybe Aaron's heard me, because I say it a lot. And along with stop, 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 it's no, no, no. But you know why? Because I believe there is a Satan, the devil. I believe that with every fiber of my being. This past year has been a challenging one in my life, in a lot of different ways. But a bit of a catharsis going on. And I'll also mention, too, that during my counseling for being ordained, Mr. Jackson told me, he said, Mike, he said, are you ready? I said, yeah, I think so. Probably not for everything, but I think I'm ready. He said, no, are you really ready? He said, because Satan is going to come after you full board. I said, well, I don't know how ready I am for that, but he said, Satan's going to come after you. Little did I know how accurate and true that statement was. Back a couple of months ago, I had come home from Louisiana. Aaron and Sam were still in Louisiana at Brendan's and Michelle's. And I don't know if it was at night or during the day, but I started to get these thoughts in my head. I mean, they came out of the blue. I know where they came from. But they absolutely came out of the blue. And each of these thoughts got worse. And don't sit there waiting for me to tell you what the thoughts are, because I ain't gonna. But they were terrible. They were awful. They were horrific. They were everything, including blasphemous. And as much as I no-no-no'd, or stop, they would not go away. And for 2 days, for 48 hours, I battled with everything that I had, this assault. Mike Carrero probably knows, because Mike was in and out of my house. I was on my couch on one of the days with a blanket over my head, with 27 sermons on, and fasted for close to 48 hours. As I tried to battle my way through what I knew was a direct assault from Satan himself. Let's turn to 1 Peter. 1 Peter 5. First Peter 5 and verse 8. For a second. Oh, wrong chapter. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Be you sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may desire. Do you believe? Do you believe and know that there is a real Satan, the devil? And he's as real as God is in heaven. Do you believe that he is active in our lives? And do you believe that someday he will be neutralized and defeated? Notice it doesn't say killed or destroyed. Just put away. This is a critical piece of understanding for the significance of this holy day. So I want to ask you three questions this afternoon, all around this topic and subject. Number one is, do you believe Satan is real? Do you believe that Satan is real? Do you believe Satan is as real as God himself is real? Do you believe that Satan is real? Consider point A, Isaiah 14:12. Ralph Levy, Isaiah 14:12. Aaron says, Dad, slow down. We can't get to the scriptures. Isaiah 14:12. How you have fallen from heaven, O star, son of dawn. How you were cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low. How you have fallen from heaven, O shining star, son of the morning. You have been thrown down to the earth, you who destroyed the nations of this world. Do you believe that Satan is real? Well, according to Scripture, and if we believe this, he was in heaven. Point B, he was in the garden. Genesis 3, verse 1 through 4. Genesis 3, verse 1 through 4. Now the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, "Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?" The woman replied to the serpent, saying, "We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say you must not eat from the fruit of the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it, or you shall surely die." In verse 4, "You will not surely die," the serpent said to the woman, "for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good from evil." Do you believe that Satan is real? Not only was he in heaven, but he was in the garden. Point C, he was with Job. Job 1 and verse 8. Job 1 and verse 8. It's pretty difficult to read this book and to look at this book and to come to the understanding or come to the realization that Satan is not as real as God is real. Job 1 and verse 8. Then the Lord said to Satan, I love this, "Have you considered my servant Mike?" Which might have happened a couple of months ago. "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one like him on the earth. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil." Do you believe that God is real? He certainly was in the lives of many, many hundreds of thousands and millions in the Old Testament. And point D, he was there tempting Christ. Let's turn to Matthew 4. Matthew 4 and verse 1. Matthew 4 and verse 1. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. Interesting that this is happening in the wilderness, which is kind of Satan's home, huh? After fasting 40 days and 40 nights, so you think you're hungry. He was really hungry. The tempter came to him and said, "If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread." This is God on earth, and Satan is tempting God. He is tempting Jesus Christ. After what he did to his father, I guess all bets were off, huh? Jesus answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. He said, "If you are the Son of God," he said, "throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, so they will lift you up on their hands, so that they will not strike your foot against the stone." And Jesus answered him and said, "It is also written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Again, the devil took him up to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. "All this I will give to you," he said, "if you bow down and worship me." And Jesus said to him, "Away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only." Then the devil left him, and the angels came and attended to Christ. So I ask again, do you believe that Satan is real? Certainly the evidence in Scripture is there. And if you just look around this world, even more so, the evidence is there. Question number two. Do you believe that Satan is active? Do you believe that Satan is active? Active today. Active in your life, active in your family's lives, active in our lives. You know, consider some things. Just a couple of weeks ago was the anniversary of 9/11, and you all know my story of, you know, being in the World Trade Center a couple of days prior to 9/11, supposed to be there that day, had a meeting scheduled, and by the grace of God, I was not. But that day obviously plays a big part in my life and my psyche and a lot of different things that go on in my head. But just imagine, just try to imagine being on the, you know, 56th floor of the North Tower or the 97th floor of the South Tower, and you're working at your desk and you're on your computer, or you're talking to your husband or your wife, or you're on your mobile device looking at the ball scores from the year before, the night before, and all of a sudden you hear a jet engine, or what sounds like a jet engine, and it's getting closer and closer, and you look out the window and your last vision is a 747 ramming into your gut. You know, they showed the pictures of the burning building, they showed the planes going in, but you don't see or feel or hear the screams and the cries of people being cut in two, of people being burned to death by gasoline, people trying to run, people trying to help others, or worse yet, people suffering with limbs cut off or 50 million pounds of building on top of them. I'll never forget the morning that I went in that building, how massive it was. I was actually in awe of how massive this building was. And I'm not talking about the height, I'm talking about the base. The lobby was just unbelievable. It's kind of like talking about the New Jerusalem coming down, how big and how massive it is, right? Well, this is like ticker toys next to that. But I'll never forget thinking how big, how massive that building was while I was there that day. And to think about 120 floors of those floors falling on top of each other, one after the other, as people are running out of the stairways and trying to save themselves and running from this calamity. You know, we think about things like that, but we really don't grasp the human toll. How about sex trafficking? Children account for half of the victims of human sex trafficking. In fact, the average age that a young person becomes involved in sex trafficking is 12 years old. What a sick and perverted world this has become. If this doesn't make you believe that Satan is active, then nothing will. How about wars? Throughout its history, U.S. has had 1,197,475 soldiers killed in war, and approximately another 2,230,290 have been wounded. And each and every one of those was a painful, agonizing death that affected not only that person, but husbands and wives, children, brothers and sisters, friends, relatives, army buddies, etc. You know, today we watch war on TV. We see what's going on in the Ukraine. And we see, you know, bombs dropping and, you know, flares and fires and stuff. But you don't really see the human toll. You don't really see, the men, the women that are executed by either side of the fence. The results of the bombs and the missiles and the bullets and everything that tear human flesh apart. This is real stuff. Again, if this doesn't make you realize and believe that there is a Satan, the devil, and that he is active today, nothing will. How about the civilian toll of wartime casualties? World War I, 9 million. 9 million civilian casualties. World War II, 40 million civilian casualties. Korea, 2 million. Vietnam, 2.7 million. Persian Gulf, 2,000. Iraq, 193,000. Afghanistan, 38,000. Satan is alive and well and wreaking havoc with God's children on this earth. How about rare diseases? Rare diseases affect 30 million Americans today. 30 million Americans. Only 5% of those rare diseases have treatments. And for those of us in here that have seen the death toll of loved ones who have passed from cancer or diabetes or other things, we know the experiences that you go through. And to go through one of those experiences of a disease that can't be healed, as my dad passed at 63 years old from liver cancer, that disease could not be treated then the way it is today. It was just simply a bad timing on my dad's part. But to watch somebody go through that, you know that Satan is active today. Number of deaths and leading to the cause of death. Heart disease, 695,000. Cancer, 605,000. COVID, 416,000. Accidents, 224,000. Stroke, 162,000. Chronic lower respiratory disease, 142,000. Alzheimer's, 119,000. Diabetes, 103,000. Chronic liver disease and cirrhosis, 56,000. Nephrotic syndrome and nephrosis, help me out here, Brenda, 54,000. If all of this doesn't make you know, or make you believe, or make you sure about the fact that there is a Satan the devil, and that he is active today, then probably nothing else will. Satan is the god of this world. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. Satan, who is the god of this world, has blinded the minds of those who don't believe. They are unable to see the glorious light of the good news. They don't understand this message about the glory of Christ, who is the exact likeness of God. All of the good, all of the lovely, all of the wonderful, all of the perfect in life, which is not a recreation of 9/11, which is not a recreation of sex trafficking or human trafficking, which is not a recreation of diseases and war and all those kinds of things. All of those things are of Satan. But all the wonderful, the good, the great, the perfect is of God. All of the bad, the sick, the destructive, and wrong is of Satan. And I've said this before, and I think it's curious. I never really looked this up, but if you take God, G-O-D, and Satan, or devil, D-E-V-L, add an extra O to God, and you got good. Add a D to evil, and you got devil. So do you believe all the world's problems and evils are a result of an act of Satan the devil? Do you believe? Point number three. Ultimately, someday, Satan will be neutralized and he will be defeated. And again, notice, not killed or destroyed, but neutralized and defeated. Do you believe that Satan will be taken out? Interestingly, this has been kind of a three-step process. Notice Revelation 12 and verse 9. Revelation 12 and verse 9, which is the first part of Satan's neutralization, first aspect of his defeat. Revelation 12 and verse 9. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil of Satan, or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth and his angels with him. Step number one to the neutralization and the defeat of Satan the devil is him being cast out of heaven into the earth. Step number two, Revelation 20. Revelation 20 and verse 1. Revelation 20 and verse 1. And I saw an angel coming down out of heaven, having the keys to the abyss and holding in his hand a great chain. And if you want to know what that great chain's about, ask Mike Carrero, because he's figured it out, as he told me last night. Ask Mike for his thoughts on the great chain that's mentioned here. I'm just kidding. But no, ask him. It's an interesting idea. He seized the dragon, that ancient serpent who is the devil or Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. He threw him where? Into the abyss, the bottomless pit, the wilderness. and locked and sealed it over him to keep him from deceiving the nations anymore until the 1,000 years were ended. After that, he must be set free for a short time. So step number two of the removal of Satan, the neutralization of Satan, the defeat of Satan, is putting him away for 1,000 years during the millennium, which we will picture in just a few short days. The final step, Revelation 20 and verse 7. Revelation 20 and verse 7. When the 1,000 years are over, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, and to gather them for battle. In number, they'll be like the sand on the seashore. They marched across the breadth of the earth and surrounded the camp of God's people in the city he loves. But fire came down from heaven and devoured them, and the devil who deceived them was finally thrown into the lake of burning sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet had been thrown. They will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Do you believe? Do you believe? So why do we keep this Day of Atonement? What is the meaning of this day? The definition for atonement is a reparation for a wrong or an injury. And there certainly has been a lot of wrong and a lot of injury over the last 6,000 years in human existence. All the holy days have a historical significance for all humanity that point to the future of how God will win his creation back, what we refer to as the plan of salvation. Now, I really think, and I mean this very seriously, that probably one of the most brilliant understandings that our church, our faith, our people have is the realization of the plan of salvation as shown in the Holy Days. It's brilliant, not that we came up with it, but that it was discovered, that it was understood that the plan of salvation is really what the Holy Days are all about. The only real meaning for them is to show what God is doing here on this earth, and ultimately, how he's going to clean this whole mess up. Let's turn to Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23. And we'll begin in verse 26. Leviticus 23 and verse 26. Then the Lord said to Moses, "The 10th day of the 7th month is the Day of Atonement. Hold a sacred assembly, afflict your souls, or deny yourselves, and present a food offering to the Lord. Do not do any work on this day, because it is the Day of Atonement, when atonement is made for you before the Lord your God. Those who do not deny themselves on that day must be cut off from their people. I will destroy them among their people, anyone who does any work on that day. You shall do no work at all. This is to be a lasting ordinance for the generations to come, wherever you live. It is a Sabbath day of rest for you, and you must deny yourselves. From the evening of the 9th day, last night of the month, until the following evening, tonight at 7:16, you are to observe your Sabbath." So we're clearly told and instructed that this is a place that we should be. This is what we should be doing today. This is what we must be doing today. But why? Let's go to Leviticus 16. What is the lesson? What is the message? What is the significance of this very, 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 very special day? Not that all of the holy days are not. They all build on each other. You pull out one, they're all going to drop. They're all cumulatively and independently critical and magnificent and wonderful. But this is a very, very special day with very special circumstances set up, which should call attention to how special this day is. Leviticus 16 and verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, who had offered up an offering that was not right, who died when they approached the Lord. The Lord said to Moses, "Tell your brother Aaron that he is not to come whenever he chooses into the most holy place behind the curtain in front of the atonement cover of the ark, or else he will die. So right here, God is telling Moses and telling everybody, stay clear of the Holy of Holies. There's one time a year where you get to come in there. And this is that time. For I will appear in the cloud over the atonement cover, and the only time that they can enter the Holy of Holies is today. And in verse 3, this is how Aaron is to enter the most holy of holy places. Not only do you can only go there one time a year, and this is the time, but this is how you must do it. He must first bring a young bull for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. He is to put on the sacred linen tunic with linen undergarments next to his body. He is to tie the linen sash around him and put on the linen turban. These are sacred garments, so he must bathe himself with water before he puts them on. The high priest was normally separated 7 days prior to the Day of Atonement to make sure that he was ceremoniously absolutely clean. And the night before, he was to read from the books of the Old Testament. In verse 5, from the Israelite community, he is to take 2 male goats for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. So his first offering, the bull and the ram, were for him and his house and his family. And the second were for the people. The second were for the children of Israel. In verse 6, Aaron is to offer the bull for his own sin offering to make atonement for himself and his household. Then he is to take the 2 goats and present them before the Lord to the entrance to the tent of meeting. He is to cast lots for the 2 goats. So we've got these 2 goats that ultimately are going to have the sins of all the people on them. These 2 goats are taken, they're identified, and then there's lots cast to identify which goat is which. Let's continue to read. Aaron shall bring the goats whose lots fall to the Lord and sacrifice it for a sin offering. But the goat chosen by lot as the scapegoat, or the Azazel goat, shall be presented, how? Alive. Now, you don't hear of too many offerings where the sacrifice gets off scot-free. You don't hear of too many offerings where the sacrifice doesn't include the death, the blood of something. Well, here's a unique situation that the goat chosen by the lot as the scapegoat that will have the sin offerings on them as well will be presented alive before the Lord to be used for making atonement by sending it into where? Into the wilderness. Where does Satan go? The wilderness. Satan is never killed. Satan is never destroyed. Satan is neutralized and defeated and spends the rest of eternity with his demons in the wilderness, where God does not exist and God is not accessible. The scapegoat is only mentioned 4 times in all in these 5 or 6 verses. The scapegoat, or the Azazel, bears the sins forever, which will forever keep him separated from God, which is the worst sentence any being can ever suffer. Let's continue on in the same chapter, verse 20. Verse 20. When Aaron has finished making atonement for the most holy place, the tent of meeting and the altar, he will bring forward the live goat. He is to lay both hands on that head of the live goat and confess over it all the wickedness and rebellion of the Israelites, all their sins, and put them on the goat's head. He shall send the goat away into the wilderness in the care of someone appointed for the task. The goat will carry on itself all their sins to a remote place, and the man shall release it into the wilderness. Verse 29. This is to be an everlasting ordinance for you. Why? Why? So on this day, we know that God's plan of salvation is completed. That God's plan of salvation has finally taken place, and the last thing that has to happen is done. And that is Satan finally being cast into the wilderness for all eternity and never able to do anything he ever did again and be completely removed from God. Think about this. Satan's known God forever. Satan's been around a long time. There's never been a time where Satan's been around that he didn't know God existed. There's never been a time where Satan was around where God was not there. Just something interesting to ponder. This is to be a lasting, verse 29, this is to be a lasting ordinance for you. On the 10th day of the seventh month, you must deny yourselves, which is what we're doing today. And do no work, whether native born or foreigner residing amongst you, because on this day of atonement will be made for you to cleanse you. Then before the Lord, you will be clean from all of your sins, finally, completely, totally clean of all of our sins when this day happens. It's a day of Sabbath rest, and you must deny yourselves. It's an everlasting ordinance. The priest who is appointed and ordained to succeed his father as high priest to make atonement. He is to put on the sacred linen garments and make atonement for the most holy place, for the tent of meeting and the altar, and for the priest and all the members of the community. This is to be a lasting ordinance for you. Atonement is to be made once a year for all the sins of the Israelites, as it was done, the Lord commanded Moses. So why are we here today? We're here today to picture that time in the future, which all the holy days do, the plan of God so perfectly, perfectly executed. A time of great joy when the Satan, the devil, that we believe exists, that we know cause havoc in our lives, will be ultimately defeated and exiled and neutralized and not around to do what he's done for us, to us, as long as he has. Just as the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, so is the Day of Atonement made for all of humanity and provides the steps so that mankind will never be separated from his Maker again. God's plan was never to be a surprise or to deceive us, but to be very plain, very consistent with what the future was and the steps that would lead us all there. The entirety of creation and everything that happens and exists happens for a reason: to present the kingdom to God when he comes to sit on this earth. Sending Satan into the wilderness, which will remove his influence, is a necessary component for that plan. Let's look at 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians. And verse 2. But we ought always to thank God for you, brothers and sisters, loved by the Lord, because God chose you as first fruits to be saved through the sanctifying work of the Spirit through belief in the truth. So why is the plan of salvation there? Why is there a Passover? Why is there a Days of Unleavened Bread? Why is there a Pentecost? Why is there a trumpets? Why is there an atonement? Why is there a Feast of Tabernacles? Why is there a last great day? It's for us. It's for the family that God chose from the foundations of the earth as his first fruits, to be the first participants in that marvelous new life. Ephesians 1, verse 4. Ephesians 1, verse 4. So do you believe? Do you believe? Ephesians 1, verse 4. Even as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and blameless before him. How? In love. This holy day speaks to a time when we will be holy and blameless before God. When the sacrifice of Jesus Christ over 2,000 years ago is finally married with the neutralization of Satan the devil. Without the absolute confidence that Satan is real, without the absolute surety that Satan is active today, and without the understanding that Satan will be neutralized and punished forever, this day is in vain. So do you believe? Do you believe that Satan is real? Do you believe that Satan is active? And do you believe that he will be neutralized by being cast into the wilderness? Godspeed this day.